Hi, this is Jane Garvey, and by popular demand, you can now completely indulge yourself with 60 glorious years of Jill Archer in The Archers. She's played, of course, by Patricia Green, and she chatted to me during the course of this week on Woman's Hour about some of the memorable scenes she's done, about the people she's worked with, and really just about life in Ambridge. Here we go. Enjoy. Patricia, Paddy, lovely to see you.
Thank you very much.
Everybody thinks they know you. They all know the sound of your voice, of course. You've caused such a stir just walking through the office today. But you must be used to that now.
It depends.
But it's the voice.
It is the voice, yes. Which is going. As I age, it's going.
Going where?
God, no, I mean, I don't know.
When you first joined the Archers, we're about to hear a clip of you back in 1959. And I've listened to it, and to me, it was unrecognisable, but I want you to listen to it now. But before we hear it, set up the scenario. How did you meet Phil Archer? What were your circumstances?
All right. She was working as a household drudge operator. She became a household drudge herself later, but this was a machine.
Yes.
And it did things like mixers and things like that.
Yeah, she was exhibiting them.
And she went around fates and shops. He had seen her before at the village fete and thought she was a bit of all right because she was blonde and she was wearing a little frock and she was quite pretty, much younger than I am, of course. It was 2 years since Grace had met her.
Yes.
Untimely end.
Yeah, very untimely end.
It was thought that the hero of the Archers could be at it again in a minute.
At it again in a minute. Well, he was looking for the right lady to fulfil the role.
I think he was looking for a bit of fluff on the side, really. And I think that was how it was put to me.
And he ended up actually being married for how long were you married in the series?
I think 52 years, I think.
52 years.
They were married, yes.
But you were very much set up as the sexy blonde.
I was.
Yeah. Let's hear that clip from 1959. You and Phil are respectably married. You have two children and you're about to tell him that there's another one on the way.
Oh.
Mm. Let's hear it.
My husband, father of my three children, acting as...
What was that? My three children? You confirmed it?
Yes, went this morning. Archer offspring number three is well and truly on the way.
Oh. Do you feel all right about it, Joe?
Me? Delighted. And you?
Well, of course. Honestly, though.
But of course I am, silly. What do you think?
Well, you're not getting much fun out of life. No sooner get the twins settled and not quite at a tie, and then here you are off again.
I'm getting all the fun out of life that I want, thanks.
You're not getting much in the way of dances and nights out.
I'll let you know when I'm getting claustrophobia. Don't forget, I spent years travelling around from one place to another. The one thing I always dreamt of was a husband, a home, and a family of my very own. Well, now I've got everything I wanted.
I can't believe it's the same actress. It must be somebody else. It certainly wasn't me.
Were you... Well, where does that voice come from, that very special...
I can't imagine. It sounds a bit like Vivian Leigh.
Well, she was a great actress.
Yes, yeah, she was. She didn't do much in The Archers, however.
She was no use in Ambridge at all. It's very 50s. It's very...
It's very... Sylvia Peters, we used to do.
Who was the BBC announcer.
She was.
Yes. But what I was going to say was that clip does actually illustrate that the young Jill was aching for some sort of security and love, wasn't she? There was a serious side to
this. Seriously, she was damaged.
Yes.
She was looking for roots. Otherwise, she surely wouldn't have married him so quickly. She knew nothing of the countryside, and she was suddenly thrown into this village and knew nothing. I mean, I do remember at one point saying, is that a pig?
Yes, I mean, that's very hard to imagine now. For those of us who've come to the Archers in the last 10 or 15 years, Jill Archer is the Archers. She represents everything we think we know about Ambridge.
Yes.
But in fact, she's an outsider, really.
She was an outsider, and that's one of the reasons, I think, that she was made to marry him, because she could... She could ask questions about agriculture.
Oh, I see, and draw
that was it.
The
yes.
information out.
Yes.
Interesting there, though, of course, that women's expectations of their lives are now rather different. She really did want the husband and the children.
She was damaged goods. I'm furious when I think back. I'm really livid. And I think Phil was unkind. I mean, she adored him, but she was taken out of her element. And, you know, Dan and Doris, they were still mourning for Grace, really. Everybody was mourning for Grace.
Well, we still hear the name Grace. And, of course, the Fairbrother boys are back in town as well. But let's move on to Grace then, because you say you were very much in her shadow when you first entered the Archers, and Grace is still very much around. The next clip we're going to play is you and Phil are discussing plans for a memorial window. Plan for the church to commemorate Grace's life. That's what you're talking about.
But what is this? A pose of indifference? And surely Grace...
I know you loved Grace, but you love me too. If Grace hadn't died, you wouldn't have loved me. You wouldn't have looked at me.
I think that's true.
You know it is.
Yes, Jill, I think I do.
The swine.
He actually just says it.
That's just so cruel. I mean, he was married to her for 5 months. Huh. And here's Jill, and she'd by which time got at least 3 children. Mm. And she'd looked after him hand, foot and finger. I really dislike Phil at the moment. I just have to go back to having fond memories of him when we next record. But I'm really angry.
Of course, relatives are not easy, particularly tricky to maintain relationships with daughters-in-law. I know that's in some ways a troubling thing for a self-confessed feminist to say, but nevertheless, there are often rivalries and tensions between mothers and daughters-in-law.
I think there are.
Yeah,
yes.
we have to just acknowledge
yes.
that. Well, you have a son, don't you?
I have a son. Fortunately, I love my daughter-in-law.
Oh, phew, thank goodness we've got
that
She's
the first time she came, she brought me a whole new set of saucepans. I mean, you know...
What's not to like?
Absolutely.
But your daughter-in-law is, of course, Ruth.
And she's a farmer.
And you haven't always got on well. There's a mutual respect, but also simmering tensions. Now, here you are, involved in a conversation in 1989, and almost inevitably, it's about the men. Phil and David, your respective husbands, father and son, of course, have fallen out, and you... And Ruth, inevitably, perhaps, have taken sides.
We'll stay right on course and let the men come to their senses all by themselves.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they will too, Mrs. Archer. It just needs a bit of give and take, really.
Well, Davy's never been very good at that, of course. That's the trouble.
I was thinking about Mr. Archer, actually.
Well, I think Phil's done a lot of giving in this situation, Ruth.
Yeah, but this situation isn't all David's fault either, is it?
No, he's just a bit strong-headed sometimes.
Strong-headed?
Yes, you know, bull at a gate. He wants everything his own way and he wants it today.
It takes two to have an argument, Mrs. Archer.
Yes, of course it does. But, you know, David always has liked his own way.
Well, haven't they both?
I hope you're not suggesting that Phil...
Oh, I'm sorry. Look... I'd better get back to work.
But what about your tea and your books?
I'll get them another time.
Oh, Ruth, look! Oh, dear. Well, I made a real mess of that. Mrs. Archer, fancy calling you mother-in-law, Mrs. Archer.
And they still can be difficult between Ruth and Jill, not least because Jill has taken root again.
I'm afraid it's the food again, isn't it?
It's the food and your omnipresence.
Yes.
Let's go forward 10 years, and this is another illustration of a little bit of aggro between Jill and Ruth. Ruth is confiding in Chris that she feels somewhat redundant at Brookfield because you're doing so much. And, of course, David prefers your cooking. Sorry, I'm thinking I'm pointing at you when I say that. And Ruth would like David to do more in the home.
At least they all survived me cooking last night.
Oh, can't be that bad.
It isn't really. It's just that everyone loves Jill's cooking. They'd be happy for her to do it all the time.
And I expect she'd be happy to oblige.
She's so good at everything around the house. It's only me that seems to have a problem.
I do sympathise. Even if you don't necessarily have a great desire to do the household chores.
Who does?
It's never easy if you're made to feel redundant as a homemaker.
Oh, that's exactly how it feels. I mean, I know I'm not the most domesticated of souls, but even David turns his nose up at my efforts when his mum's around.
That must be very difficult.
I'm determined to stick at it, though. And I'm going to make sure David does his share too.
Do you think that Jill does understand Ruth's drive to be an independent working woman? Is she jealous of her, do you think?
I think Jill would be envious of Ruth, because Ruth is a farmer in her own right. I think Jill, left to her own devices, would have been perhaps a businesswoman of some sort. A bit like Carol, who had her own vineyard and market garden and things like that. But Jill is... she's bound to the house, really. But I think if she hadn't been orphaned at 7, she would have been a lot more feisty early on than she was.
It's interesting that if the Jill character were around today, were a child today, they would be helped a lot more, wouldn't they? And I know you think that...
she would.
...that Jill... she just seems indomitable, but in fact, she's somebody with a dark past and a sad childhood.
I think she's damaged, and I think she should really go and have some help, even now.
We're moving on now, Paddy, to talk about family and about women's lives, women's bodies, fertility, frankly, actually, and perhaps, or more accurately, I should have said, women's control over their own bodies. Now, in this extract from 1959, you're in conversation with your sister-in-law, Christine, Auntie Chris, she's normally referred to now in The Archers. And you're asking Christine whether her husband Paul ought to have a check-up because they are trying to get pregnant as a couple and it hasn't happened.
No joy at all with you?
No.
And the specialist said you were perfectly all right, didn't he?
100%.
So?
So, Paul can't really blame me, can he?
Have you, said anything to him?
Such as?
Well, maybe he should have a check over.
Oh, heavens, no. I haven't said anything like that.
Why?
Well, it's a bit embarrassing, to say the least.
Why? You both want babies now, don't you? Or don't you?
Yes, definitely.
Then surely the thing to do is to be sane and sensible and 1959-ish about the problem and tackle it. No use pretending it isn't there. Take my tip and talk the whole thing over with Paul.
I wouldn't mind myself if Paul didn't mind, but he does. He minds dreadfully. And always the implication is that I'm letting him down.
I love that bit where you say, be more 1959-ish.
I suppose that was what used to happen. I suppose the men couldn't bear to think that they perhaps couldn't have babies.
Well, I wonder how many women actually understood that, in fact, it wasn't necessarily their...
No.
I mean, a fault is the wrong word to use in these circumstances, of course. But
yeah, they couldn't help it.
It was an issue for both rather than just for one.
Their pride would be hurt if they thought they couldn't have children.
Did they go on to have children?
At one point, Christine had pills to try and help, but they never did have a child of their own. They adopted.
Jill, of course, and Phil were famously fertile. No problems there at all. In 1959, here you are, you want a home birth in your second pregnancy. You've had Kenton and Shula, and you are talking to Phil here about what would be more convenient. Now, you would like a normal home birth. I don't know, Phil seems to want just to have you out of the picture altogether and out of his way so he can get on with farming. But here we go, let's have a listen.
Why shouldn't I have the baby here in my own home amongst the people I love? Why should I be pushed off to a hospital or nursing home for a fortnight when I'm perfectly all right and healthy? It isn't as if it were my first baby or there are any complications. I'm about the most uncomplicated mother-to-be that ever happened.
Are those my eggs?
Yes.
Well, they're going hard. I like them soft.
Hard or soft, you'll get them in your eye at the rate you're going on. Oh, do be quiet, Shula. You must realise that if more women had their babies at home, there'd be more beds for women who really needed hospital care.
Maternity homes with every modern aid and comfort are there for the special purpose which they exist. You'd have the child in absolute comfort.
And with a lot less inconvenience for Philip Archer. Here, get on with your breakfast.
No, you don't break the plate.
Oh, for heaven's sake! Kenton, if you drop that once more, I'll...
Thank goodness she's standing up for herself at last.
Yeah, she does seem to be standing up for herself
a little
more
bit,
there.
Yes.
Yeah. The fact, though, that you were having that conversation, that the Archers thought that conversation was worthy of inclusion, probably tells us that at that time there was a push, clearly, to get women to have children out of the home and in hospital.
Yes.
I mean, I wonder whether the authorities asked the Archers to include it. It wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, nowadays it would be the reverse because we're short of midwives.
But at the time, clearly...
And a fortnight in a nursing home.
You see, your character there expressed horror at the prospect of a fortnight's bed rest after having a baby. It sounds fabulous to me.
Oh, wonderful.
This is a very serious clip, actually, about Jill coming to terms with Elizabeth's pregnancy.
Yes.
And indeed subsequent abortion. This is in 1992. Jill has found out about Elizabeth's relationship with a man called Cameron Fraser. Is he a bad lot?
He's very smooth talking, and I think he'd been around the village a bit before Elizabeth. He was very urbane and flirty.
In this clip, Elizabeth is confiding in her mum, your character Jill, that he, Cameron, would like her to have an abortion.
Was it something I said?
Yeah.
I didn't mean to upset you.
It's not you.
Is it Cameron?
Yes.
He might just be having trouble getting used to the idea.
You think that's why he hasn't rung?
I don't know.
I do. He thinks I should have an abortion.
What?
And then everything will be as it was.
How dare you?
I don't know.
Oh, darling. Oh, Lizzie.
That's very sad, actually.
It's very sad.
And there have been some lovely scenes between you and Elizabeth. Is Elizabeth your favourite child?
Yes.
I thought so. I picked that.
How clever of you, yes.
And importantly, actually, had that child been born, that would have been Phil and Jill's first grandchild,
yes,
wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
So yes. There is a significance there.
There is. And I think Jill is a bit old-fashioned about abortion. Well, I mean, I agree that it's women's right to choose, and I've always thought that. But perhaps Jill, because she lost her parents, because she hasn't had a grandchild yet, and because she's become a sort of Earth Mother, hasn't she, by now, she doesn't want the abortion. She can't get around it. And, of course, Shula is desperately trying to have
a child.
Have
yes.
a child, yes. Yeah.
That's your other daughter,
yes,
Kenton's
that's right.
twin.
Yes.
This is a year or so on, and Elizabeth has had an
yes.
abortion. But now Ruth and David have had a child, your first grandchild,
yes.
Pip. And Jill is talking to Elizabeth here and just basically saying that it must be hard in the circumstances for Elizabeth to hold her newborn niece.
Elizabeth, I know this must be hard for you.
Not anymore.
Honestly?
Mum, I've got a lot of regrets, but I still think I did the right thing.
Do you?
Yes, Mum. And I know it hurt you and Dad and Shula, but it hurt me too.
We all make mistakes.
It wasn't a mistake.
I know, but...
Look, Mum, I don't want sympathy. I don't need it anymore. You know, this is my life and I'm getting on with it. And I'm going to try and set Pip the best example I can.
Anyone who thinks that the Archers is uber cosy, it isn't, is it?
No, that isn't a bit cosy, is it?
The fact that your character came to terms with that abortion, do you remember whether Jill had to work at it or what happened?
She never really came to terms with it, but I think, fortunately, she kept her mouth shut after a while because it wasn't her abortion, it was Elizabeth's. I think she should have been more on Elizabeth's side, even if she didn't feel it.
That was 1993, Paddy. I don't know whether... Do you think Jill's views on abortion or indeed on...
I think she would certainly say, yes, a woman has the right to choose, certainly.
But it wouldn't stop her having a view about her own daughter.
No, that's right.
I mean, I know the character of Jill Archer goes to church. She's a very regular attender
of
church.
Yes, she is. I think she gets comfort from church.
Right, but you wouldn't describe her necessarily as religious as such.
She's not over-devout. She does go to church, so your guess is as good as mine. Whether she entirely believes in all of it, I don't know. She's never said.
Well, I'm sitting here with Britain's most wanted woman, Jill Archer. Everybody will know what's happened to you. Actress Patricia Green, fugitive, criminal, lawbreaker. And when you first knew this was going to happen, that you were going to be, at the age of 86, saddled with a criminal record, as an actress, what was your reaction?
I thought it was great fun.
Did you?
Yes. at last, she's done something really heinous.
At last. Although her family, of course, are utterly horrified. Anyway, in case anyone didn't hear it, and you may well want to listen later, I absolutely appreciate that, but in case you didn't and you don't mind hearing it now, here is Jill Archer at last night's protest against food waste. This, of course, is all about the new restaurant that has forced a cafe, which was helping people in food poverty, to close.
What do you know about hunger?
That's enough.
There are people round here who can't afford to feed their families.
Come on now, you've made your point.
But she's not listening. Listen to me, you ignorant woman!
You tell her, Jill.
There are 10 million tons.
I said that's enough.
Don't manhandle me, Harrison.
Well, stop elbowing.
10 million tons of perfectly good food.
Oh, that hurts!
Waste every year in the UK.
Can't you do something, officer?
Oh, for heaven's sake!
Oh, Jill!
Oh, I didn't mean to hit
her. What was that?
My eye!
But at least I've got your attention.
What did you throw?
It was only a flapjack.
And there's plenty more where that came
from. No. Now stop it. Give me that tin.
Oh.
I said give me that tin.
Kirsty, you take it.
No. Oh, no, don't do that. I don't want anyone else getting worked up. Others could get hurt.
Oh, don't be so silly.
I'm warning you.
And if there are any children listening, Radio 4 would like to make it clear that you do not throw flapjacks ever at any time. And, Paddy, I am disgusted. As a member of the public, I don't know what you were thinking of.
She did get carried away, didn't she?
Yes, I really do think
Fishwife Jill.
Yes, and there is something incredibly cathartic, even as a listener, to hear that, hear the anger in the woman's voice.
Yeah, well, I was delighted to do it, really.
You did throw just a single flapjack, not the tin that Harrison refers to.
No, but she told the others to throw, because he'd got her in a lock. She couldn't throw any more, so she said to the others, there's plenty more in the tin, throw them. I mean, she was inciting to violence.
Well, it doesn't end well for Jill, who ends up at the police station where she's cautioned. I should say that she is eventually released.
Mum, how on earth have you managed... What were you doing throwing flapjacks?
I was provoked.
I thought this was a protest against food waste.
It was. Ooh,
dear. That's a bit unfortunate, isn't it? It was just the first thing that came to hand.
You're 86 years old, for heaven's sake.
What's that got to do with anything?
All that time, you managed to live a perfectly blameless life. And now you go and get yourself a criminal record.
He's in full flight there. The children don't like it very much, do they, I guess, when parents embarrass them?
No, that's it, isn't it? It is the embarrass factor, I think so, really.
And he's not happy.
And, of course, the rest of the village will be delighted because... She's fallen off a perch well and truly now, hasn't she?
Yeah, no, she really has. But I wonder whether you think people have just underestimated Jill, because there's always been... And, of course, she's befriended. She and Kirsty have got a lot closer over recent weeks and months. What impact do you think Kirsty has had on Jill?
Well, she's awakened her social conscience. Yeah. About lots of things.
But it's always been there. This is interesting. This is Ruth in 1989 talking about Jill being a farmer's wife.
Look, Kenton, I may be married to a farmer, but I don't want to be called a farmer's wife. A farmer in my own right, perhaps, one day, but not a farmer's wife.
No, don't let Mum hear you saying that.
Oh, I don't mean to be rude. But if I was stuck indoors with only the phone to answer and cakes to make, I think I'd go mad.
She does a lot more than just cook and answer the phone, you know.
I know, but I still couldn't do it. I like being outdoors too much. That's my trouble.
Yes, she is. Ruth's, I've not heard that before. Ruth's pretty horrible about you there.
But you see, she's a professional farmer. And I mean, if I were a professional farmer, I'd get a bit fed up with somebody who just sat at home, she thinks, making cakes and doing things like that.
Yeah, I mean, you do. It is a bit of a running joke, the amount of cake you make.
And people stop me in the street and say, she gives me an inferiority complex. She gives me an inferiority complex.
Do you actually make cake?
Well, I used to. If I did, I would eat it, you see. So I've got a friend who makes the cakes and we have it in the afternoon.
I see. But there's no way you're making cherry Bakewells 1 minute and
no.
Big fruitcake the next. No.
And pork pies with an egg in the middle. Now that is...
Gala pie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She can do that.
Can she do that?
She did it on a picnic recently.
They are things of mystery to me, gala pies.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I've got the WI book, so I know how it's done.
So it's not just one long egg?
No.
I used to, as a small kid, I genuinely used to think it was a long egg.
Absolutely.
Now, Jill has always been very strong-minded in her own way. It's always been on her terms. We've unearthed this. This isn't that long ago, actually, 2014. And you're busy working behind the scenes against the planned new road.
Yes.
And you're in conversation with your arch nemesis, Charlie Thomas.
The farm has been in my husband's family for generations. This road would cut it in two.
Well, there would be compensation.
How could you compensate for something like that? I was up on Lakey Hill on Monday. Have you been there?
Not yet. But I hear the view is very beautiful.
It wouldn't be if it's a view of motorway bridges and the birdsongs drowned out by lorries thundering past.
But those lorries might be bringing prosperity to the village.
Why would that matter if it had lost its heart and soul?
Well...
Believe me, Mr. Thomas.
Oh, please, call me Charlie.
Charlie, then. I'm not being nimbyist. The other proposals are far less destructive, if there has to be a road at all.
Yes, that's all about an older woman just making her feelings clear.
I really am on your side in that scene.
Mm.
I think it was one of the best scenes I've ever done.
Yes, because she's fighting her corner, but in
And she'd prepared for it.
Yeah, and he is a bit patronising.
Yes, he's very.
But there was something about all that mob who were trying to get the
yes.
road built that I didn't like.
I know. I'm really proud of that.
There was also, I gather, that you ran a campaign to save the village school?
Absolutely, and to try and get a site for gypsy people, and she lost that one. Because she's done local politics.
What party does Jill Archer belong to?
She's in the middle. She's
I knew you'd say that.
She might be slightly left of middle. She certainly campaigned for the Liberals. She's the only one in Ambridge who would ever vote anything like red or mauve or anything like that. She's slightly tinged with
pink. We know, Paddy, that Jill has been widowed now for quite some time. Her husband, Phil Archer, died in 2010. And genuinely, I listened to this little clip we're about to hear a couple of hours ago, and it is really moving. And I think a lot of people will remember it, actually. So this is from 2010. Elizabeth has found a Valentine's card that Phil was going to give to your character, Jill. Of course, we should say the couple had been married in Ambridge for 52 years.
I found this. It's addressed to you. Well, I mean, it's got your name on it.
Oh, Elizabeth.
It doesn't look like a letter.
Let's see.
Would you like me
to
go?
No, stay here. To my wife on Valentine's Day. You bring me sunshine every day of my life. Oh, my love, Phil.
Mum.
He never really, really believed in all that sentimental stuff, you know, but he never missed a Valentine's Day because he knew it was important to me.
That is genuinely sad, Paddy. I know.
Even I found that sad.
Yes, and you have a very sort of light touch about the way you approach these things, but I imagine that the death of Phil will have been something that a lot of listeners felt really very, very sad about.
It was very well written.
Yes, yeah.
And I could see him sitting in that chair.
Yes. And of course, you'd worked with the actor, Norman...
For Yonks.
Yes,
yes.
Yeah. I imagine you were. I mean, you can't work with anybody in radio or anywhere else without
right.
becoming friends for that.
Absolutely.
That
and, you know, and he'd been ill for a long time and he'd soldiered on, you know.
This is from a little bit further on, shortly after the death of the character of Phil in the programme. You're now saying that you're lucky to have had the chance to read the card that he had written. You're sad because he, Phil, hadn't been able to read the card that you'd written to him. So you read it now and effectively you say goodbye to him on the programme. Here we go.
I was lucky, Phil. I saw the card you wrote to me and you never had the chance to read mine, so let me read it to you now. To my husband on Valentine's Day. You mean the world to me, and so much more. So much more. Phil, I know this won't be the last time, but I want to say goodbye and... You know I love you, my darling. I always will.
When you do a scene like that, do you... How many times do you do it? I mean, is that something that you can...
The first take is usually the best.
Now, for relatively new listeners to the Archers, who only know the Jill who is a saint and who's recently become a campaigner...
A villain.
And a villain. Well, she's had a tussle with the law. She does have a backstory, and it's a sad one in her case, and she's rather a vulnerable person. Now, this brings us on to the next clip, which is, again, you talking to Elizabeth. This is after her husband Nigel had fallen off the roof. That was at Christmas, wasn't it?
It was New Year's Eve.
I mean, how cruel is that? In 2011.
Yes.
Which makes New Year very difficult for Elizabeth every single year. And because your own characters, Jill's mother had died when she was very little and she was only seven and she hadn't gone to the funeral... You're here in this scene explaining to Elizabeth that she really must let Lily and Freddie, the twins, her twins, who are only 11, go to their father Nigel's funeral. And she begins by saying that she knew her husband Phil had loved her and that he would not abandon her.
He taught me to love again so I could start to forgive my mother.
Forgive her?
For abandoning me, for leaving me without a word and never coming back.
But she couldn't... You must have known that. She was dead.
I was seven, Elizabeth.
Oh, Mama, I wish you'd told me before.
I didn't want to make you any sadder than you were, and I knew it would.
It has.
But I had to tell you how important it is. Please, Elizabeth. I know how hard it is, but give Lily and Freddie that chance. Let them say goodbye to their father, please.
And they do go to the funeral, don't they? I remember that.
That was genuine because I didn't let my son go to his grandpa's funeral, which would have been his first funeral. And then a year later his father died, so his first funeral was his father.
Mm.
So that.
And how old was your son then?
12.
Yes, still very young.
I made the mistake, you see, Anna. So I really meant that with Elizabeth.
And when you can bring some real-life experience to a scene, does that help hugely?
Yes, it does, yes. Yeah. All actors do that. Actors have got this little tiny bit of brain that when something really awful happens, or wonderful, they think, I must remember this. I mean, I use the death of my cat regularly.
Oh, Patty, please. When did the cat... I've got a cat. This is very close to home. When did the cat...
When you want quick tears. It's the cat...
You don't really do that, do you?
Yes, you really do.
What was your cat called?
William.
Can I ask how William met his end?
He was wonderful. He was ill for one day. Right. And he was sitting in my sitting room being fed the odd prawn.
Yeah.
And he weed in his cat box and he went outside while I was in bed and died. After that last prawn.
You cannot ask for a better end, can you?
Wonderful. He was just fabulous.
Now, Jill has learnt to live a different sort of life as a widow, as many people do. Indeed, you yourself, I know, have been widowed. How did you find that rebuilding your existence? Or did you not see it that in quite...
Oh, yes, I did. I mean, it's everything, you see. I mean, I couldn't mend a fuse. I couldn't do anything, you see, really. So everything was different. And I used to get really angry. Because I'd get back to the railway station if I'd gone on the train and it was dark and it was cold and it was raining and he wasn't there to pick me up and I would be furious.
Anger that you'd been left.
Yes.
Well, we're back to that abandonment thing.
Well, we are, yes.
This is about independent life, becoming a widow and actually having your own money. And you clearly, in the past... We're not in that situation in Ambridge. We've got a couple of clips here illustrating your dependence on housekeeping money, which was a reality, clearly. This is from 1982. Jill has sold some potatoes and has spent the money thinking it was hers to keep. But Phil expected to bank the money. Jill, though, as she illustrates now, had already spent it.
It's too bad, it really is. He might have told me earlier.
About what?
The potatoes.
That explains everything.
I mean, I've been doing all the work. I've been the one who's been interrupted in the middle of things to see to people wanting them. It's not your father who's been helping little old ladies into their cars with a half a hundredweight of spuds in his arms.
I thought you didn't mind all of that.
I don't. But when your father marches blithely in and announces that he's off to the bank and can he have the potato money, then I think it's a bit thick.
Why?
Because I haven't got it, I've spent it.
What?
I thought it was quite legitimately my perks on top of the housekeeping. I was having a lovely time.
Was it a lot?
Enough.
and I don't see what's so funny. Wouldn't you have assumed the same?
Well, yes.
Absolutely. Good for Jill.
I'd have spent it too.
My goodness, I'd have taken more than the potato money, I can tell you.
Yeah, I mean, that does seem to me like a real timepiece. Yes, but it was only 1982.
That's amazing, isn't it?
I just left school, in fact, probably when you were having that very conversation.
That is amazing, yes. Yeah.
And of course, Jill has got a bit of money. She's got a few quid.
She gets a pension from the farm.
And
Carol's rent money
from
the cottage.
From cottage.
But what does she spend her money on? Flour, I suppose.
Yes, a lot of self-raising,
imagine. Cooking fat,
But here you are offering to bail out David when Brookfield the Farm is struggling after IBR.
As you know, I have quite a lot of money in savings.
No, ma'am.
Plus, there's the rent from Glebe Cottage.
No, please.
And seeing that Pip wouldn't take my money for the mob grazing, I want you to have it instead.
No, ma'am, you can't do that.
Why not? It makes perfect sense.
Things aren't that bad yet.
I beg to differ.
No, there is a huge difference between not being able to employ the Grundys and going cap in hand to my own mother.
David!
Mum, I appreciate the offer. I really, really do. But me and Ruth and Pip, we've got to sort this out ourselves. And we will.
All right. But if it gets any worse, promise me you'll take the money.
OK, Mum. If it gets a whole lot worse, then, yes, I promise we will. But it's not going to.
Yes. You would help them out, wouldn't you? You
know, absolutely, yes. I think money is to be shared. I do.
Did Phil leave her money?
No. The money was left in the business and the children have a share.
Kenton, I mean, is always complaining, but then he's never put anything into the farm, has he?
No.
So he can't really expect to get anything out of it.
No, but the others haven't either, really, have they? David is the only one. Well, David and now Pip, of course.
Yes, so it will pass down to Pip eventually.
We don't know.
Do you think that she will marry a Fairbrother? Because that would be
Jill
Archer.
I would
think
it's quite likely,
but
really.
Jill surely will be horrified.
She would if it's Toby. We don't know, do we?
But why does it have to be anyone remotely connected to Grace Fairbrother?
It's the demon name, isn't it? It could be called the Archie Stroke Fairbrothers.
Or Brookfield will one day be owned by a couple.
By a Fairbrother. Ah.
One of the things I really, really enjoy, Paddy, is the wrestling for territory that goes on at Brookfield between Jill, Grand Matriarch, and Ruth, woman farmer, daughter-in-law, and all the kind of mutual respect, but also the antipathy. I think both characters genuinely feel for each other. A lot of women, I think, will be able to relate to this, won't they?
Absolutely. They each have their strengths.
Mm, very diplomatically put. Of course, you used to be very much your character completely at the helm of the kitchen at Brookfield. And this goes way back, this clip. It's a lovely bit, this. This is from the 1980s. You're discussing plans to update your kitchen. This is long before. I remember Jennifer's new kitchen, which is relatively recent,
wasn't
it? Oh,
that was a lovely story.
That was very, very funny. this is the Brookfield kitchen in the 1980s. Lots of wood is being planned and a all-new breakfast bar. Phil has got to see the plans because, of course, he's the man who's paying for it.
Won't it be nice when we're sitting at our breakfast bar talking, surrounded by natural wood cupboards, egg racks and so on?
Breakfast bar?
Yes, Phil, you know the kind of thing.
You don't mean one of those flap things that you have to perch around on high stools?
Well, no, not exactly.
Well, I should jolly well hope not.
Any more tea, Mum?
In the pot, dear.
I think you'd better submit your plan for the new kitchen to me before you get too far with it.
Dad, of all the nerve!
Well, I don't end up eating my breakfast in a cross between an operating theatre and a rustic barn, that's all.
Give me some credit, Phil.
Well, I'd just like to have a glance at it.
Oh, I hate these moments in life, don't you, Mum? When the gloves come off and the bare knuckles of male domination hit you on the nose.
I was going to show you my ideas anyway. I'd hardly have just gone and done it.
Good.
I bet Mrs. Thatcher doesn't have to submit her plans to Dennis.
Your father is paying for it, dear.
That's what I meant about the bare knuckles.
Well, yes, you put her right there. Your father is paying for it, dear.
Yes, that's horrible. I don't think we ever did it.
I don't picture the kitchen at Brookfield as having high stools and a breakfast bar.
No, we have a table, a kitchen table.
Now, this is from 1989, and David and Ruth are working on the farm. And Jill has come up with the goods again, Paddy. She's brought them a lovely, lovely lunch, a not insubstantial lunch. And I should say, a warning here, the picnic does include flapjacks.
These are ham and salad.
Right.
And that's cheese and pickle.
Great.
And a slice of cake each and some flapjacks.
Oh, thanks.
Dinner time.
Hello, Ruth.
Mum's brought us a picnic.
Picnic?
Well, I thought as you were so busy. Oh, and there's coffee in a thermos.
Oh, thanks, Mum. That's fantastic.
The rest is for Kenton and your father when they're ready.
They'll have to wait. Wow, I am starving.
We're hoping to finish this field by tonight.
Well, it should stay fine.
Don't say that.
Well, surely it's not going to rain.
Well, no need to tempt fate.
Well, I'll leave you to it.
Right.
See you at tea time.
Okay.
Bye.
Come on, I should tuck in. Help yourself.
Oh, I'll just rest for a minute.
Show you what you like about Mum. She does a good sandwich.
Oh, aye. Mothers always do.
Oh, what's that supposed to mean?
I'm sure your mum's the best sandwich maker in the whole of Borsetshire.
Yeah, well, you are.
She is. If I were Ruth, I'd kill Jill.
You're already in enough trouble.
Yes.
I don't think planting those sorts of thoughts in people's heads is a very good
idea.
And
then she said, I'll see you at tea time. Is she going to give them afternoon tea as well?
Oh, I would imagine so. She'll be staggering up the hill with an enormous fruitcake and load of cream horns. It does sort of lead us into the area of women as providers, which I think has been a constant theme of the character Jill's life.
So absolutely.
But it is changing. In the Archers, there are lots of examples of women who've... Kate, for example, who's,
yes.
whatever you might think of her, is trying to have a career and do her own thing.
Absolutely,
mind
yes.
you, with
yes,
her father's
yes.
and mother's money,
yes.
I should say.
Yes, I think the younger ones are less keen on food and providing.
It's the endless...
They'd dial a meal, wouldn't they? They'd call it in or they'd have a snack.
Yeah, and over the years, obviously, that has most definitely changed.
I don't think Jill's ever had a meal at the ball.
But she wouldn't have just a cheese and pickle bap at the pub.
No, I don't think so.
Because, of course, she's the best sandwich maker in all of Borsetshire.
Yes.
This is another one from 1999. Ruth and Jill talking about what everyone's going to eat that night. Now, I'd like to say... this conversation doesn't go on. But actually, on the whole, it is still up to women to decide what people are eating. Because
yes.
I always think, not the cooking that's as much of a drag, as just the deciding what to cook.
Exactly, because it gets so boring. You see the same thing over and over again. I mean, I live on beans on toast quite a lot of the time myself.
One of my favourite meals.
And mine.
Now, in this clip, Ruth offers to cook supper. She was thinking about having a fish pie.
Would you like me to cook supper?
You've got some catching up to do.
No, it's okay. I was going to help Bert with the cars, but he seems to be getting on fine on his own.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I feel guilty about letting you do all the housework anyway.
Well, in that case, that would be lovely, thank you.
Right. I was thinking of doing fish pie.
That's exactly what I was going to do.
Great. I'll just get one out of the freezer.
Do you mean a ready-made one?
Well, they're very good. We've got haddock or cod.
Actually, I'd taken some cod out of the freezer earlier. It's defrosted now.
Oh.
It is much nicer if you make it yourself. I'll give you a hand if you like.
No, you're having a break. I'll do it. If you at least let me have frozen peas with it.
Absolutely, I use them too.
Good. Now, where's a recipe for the sauce?
I usually find it's best to cook the fish and potatoes first.
OK, I'll peel the spuds.
And I'll do the fish.
Honestly, Jill, you don't need to.
Yes.
No, she's impossible
she
sometimes,
is
Jill, isn't she?
So irritating.
I'd sock her.
Yeah,
I would.
I really do have some sympathy with that sentiment. It's the pea. Wait, oh, I use frozen. Oh, bully for you! You
absolutely.
Actually, you will deign to use frozen peas.
Yes. Yeah.
God's sake, woman!
I mean, they're a wonderful invention. Frozen peas.
Oh, they're literally the best thing.
Absolutely.
Well, not quite the best thing. You must know your character at least as well as the scriptwriters now.
So, I know her better than anybody in the world.
Right, but if a scriptwriter came to you and said, this is what Jill's about to be doing, and this is what... And would you say, actually, no, Jill wouldn't do
I would. It. I mean, if she goes into the pub, she has a sherry.
Always.
And it's not a sweet sherry. Peggy has a sweet sherry. But Jill certainly has a dry sherry.
And is there anything else she emphatically doesn't like or does like?
I think she likes everything fresh, really. I don't think she'd buy a ready meal.
Yes, I love the idea of you sitting at home with beans on toast,
yeah.
listening to your alter ego making a fish pie from scratch.
Yes.
Now, what has happened lately is, yes, you've really forged a friendship with Kirsty because of your campaigning, but also Kirsty sort of gently pointing out that sometimes you need to stop putting yourself in the role of family provider and you should allow yourself to have your life and do your own thing. In this extract, Kirsty is telling you that your mantra of the family relies on me and all the rest of it, I don't know, actually, maybe sometimes you need to step back a little bit. And Kirsty's basically saying, are you honestly, Jill, as necessary as you believe yourself to be at Brookfield?
Things are so busy on the farm.
Oh, I think you'd really enjoy yourself.
No, really, I can't. The family relies on me. I'll have all manner of jobs to do that day.
OK, fair enough. Oh, looks like David found the gin.
Oh.
What is it?
A note from David. Alan and Usha invited them round for an early birthday drink.
Oh, whose birthday?
Ruth, Friday.
Right.
So they'll see me later at Linda's party. I suppose that means they won't be wanting the casserole.
Smells lovely. I'm sure Josh and Ben will fit down.
Well, they're not here. Ben's at a friend's and Josh has gone to a concert. Well, they can have it tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll probably taste even better then.
Hmm.
Jill?
Yes?
Next Friday. Are you really sure you couldn't spare the time?
There we are. At 86, you are coming into your own. Not bad, is it?
No, it's good, isn't it? That's high tragedy for Jill, you know, of course, that the family doesn't actually need her. That's really bad for her. She hates that.
But it is allowing herself.
Absolutely. Then she gets quite carried away with doing other things.
And that's how she ends up in trouble.
Yes.
So the message here actually is, don't get above yourself. Don't leave the domestic sphere because you're likely to get arrested.
That's right.
I'm not sure that is a very positive message. Patricia, Paddy, it's been lovely spending time
with you. Thank you so much.
We've had a lot of fun. We've covered a lot of ground. And I just hope you love your job, don't you?
I do.
Yeah, I hope you carry on enjoying it for donkey's years to come.
Thank you very much indeed.
But don't do anything really ridiculous.
No, all right. Well, you never know with Jill. She's now finding her own feet. She might do all sorts of things. Hmm. What do you think? The first brothel in?
No. No. Cut this now. She is an absolute legend, Patricia Paddy Green, who plays Jill Archer in The Archers, of course. And if you're tempted by the thought of your very own Jill Archer-inspired flapjacks, we have the recipe. It's exclusive to the Woman's Hour website, bbc.co.uk/womanshour.